Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Where do you turn when you really need an answer? When your colleagues, Google, and even anything you ever wanted to know all fail to yield the information you need, there is a place to turn. Libraries are staffed by people who not only know how to track down the facts you require, but are downright passionate about helping you do it. My guest today is a huge believer in the value of libraries, and her respect has only grown since she's undertaken a study of the amazing ways they have expanded their services to keep pace with changing times and technology. Marilyn Johnson's new book is called This Book is Overdue: How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. Marilyn, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris. I'm glad to be here.
I love the story of the genesis for this book. You were writing another book about obituaries and came to the surprising conclusion that the best ones were written about librarians.
I couldn't believe that the same profession held people who were reinventing information architecture with people who were keeping their communities together. It seemed like everything in the world was encompassed. If they were interested in things, they became expert in the subject. They had interesting lives.
What are the ideal qualities for a librarian?
Well, they have to be curious. Mm-hmm. They have to be patient. They have to care about people and want to communicate with them. And I think they have to be, really believe in the power of the word.
And almost without exception, they are fierce guardians both of our right to information and also our right to privacy. Will you talk about that?
I thought it was very interesting that computers ended up in libraries. In Europe, they have cafes, cyber cafes, that you can go into. Here we have them in our libraries, and we've basically given the trust for them to a profession that holds as one of its dearest tenets the privacy of individuals to seek information and not have to be seen doing that. So I think they are actually an ideal profession to guard those computers.
What's so interesting about that, too, though, is that, you know, we all know how to Google these days for information, but those searches cannot respond the way a human being would. Will you tell us about the patron who needed help learning more about Buddhism?
Oh, yes, that was one of my favorite stories, but they all have stories. Buddhism, this person, this girl was trying to research a paper for high school on Buddhism. And if you click Buddhism on Google, if you put that in the search box, what comes up is videos of girls dancing in their underwear.
Shaking one's booty, as it were.
Joke sites. Booty. It's all about booty. And the librarian prompted her, and it turned out she wanted to do a piece about Buddhism.
And without knowing how to spell it, she would never have gotten there.
It's a little bit hard, and she didn't really even know what it was. So. When you don't know how to ask the question and you don't know what you don't know, a librarian is invaluable.
Yeah, and that's quite a skill set, and I would imagine it takes a while to develop that, to sort of not only understand where to find the information, but read the people who need it.
That's exactly right, and what they're going to use the information for, to have some sort of context for it. It's a skill set that I think psychiatrists or reporters have.
And you said, yeah, they are not programmed for saying, I have no idea. If they have no idea, they'll find an idea.
It's very frustrating to stump a librarian, and I try to do it all the time, actually. there are these wonderful websites that you can go on, most of them attached to libraries, where they offer chat service, and you can go online sometimes in the middle of the night, and a trained librarian will enter a little dialogue with you, and you type in the question you want to have answered, and they'll scurry off and try to find an answer for you. And it's great fun at 3 o'clock in the morning to use one of these and see if you can stump them.
It's pretty amazing that this kind of service is available to us for free. And I think you have a section in the book where you talk about how much it ought to cost for us to go to a librarian and ask for help with something like this.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we say it's for free, but we support it or we don't support it with our tax dollars. And, you know, we get it. Librarians do not make a lot of money. It is incredible value for the tax dollars that we spend. But you can see it in communities where people just are running out of things to cut on the budget, and they end up cutting the library, you see it wither and die. I mean, you know, you can only cut so many librarians before the whole library becomes a tomb. And I think it's very short-sighted. I really think it is the place where people go to continue their education, the People's University, as a great librarian once called it. And it's also a place where if you're in trouble, if you are having trouble navigating the bureaucracy, if other social services and civic services are not meeting your needs, you can go there, and they're kind. They really walk you through it.
I wonder if part of the reason that certain, you know, entities that are struggling for money find it easy to cut the library first is that people tend to jump to a really narrow definition of what a library is, a building full of books, and you go and find what you want on the shelf and you check out and leave.
Yeah, why don't you go to Blockbuster or replaced Blockbuster? Why don't you go and buy these things? Why don't you go and use your computer? Well, what if you don't have a computer? What if your computer is on the blink? What if you don't have the money to go and actually buy the books? What if you need a warm place to sit and read your paper? I find them to be wonderful places for when you've run out of other options.
Today's libraries are very often sort of technological marvels, but this transition did not come easily. Can you talk a little bit about what it took to transition even just existing catalogs, existing collections, rather, so that they could be cataloged digitally?
Well, anybody who has suffered through an upgrade of their computer or changed, you know, their old-fashioned cell phone for a smartphone or tried to educate themselves on how to use whatever the next device is that's, you know, entered the door of their house knows that it's a tremendous challenge to master the technology that we're being asked to use these days. And for librarians who have been trained, most of them who are working these days have been trained in the social sciences. You know, they come from history majors, and they basically learned how to structure and organize collections of books. Well, now we have books in so many different formats. We have information coming in so many different ways. I think, you know, the new librarians who are being trained as much in computer science as they are in the humanities. And it's really wonderful. I think everybody should have that kind of training. But you go to the library, I go to the library to get technological help as much as I go to check out books.
And how have RFID tags changed the library business?
Well, not every library can afford it, unfortunately. They're pretty cool. What they do is they put, and I don't really know how to talk about it, there's a little something in the book that can be read.
A little chip of some kind.
A little chip that can be read by a device. So you can use self-checkout. You don't even need to find the little, it was challenging for me to write this book. But it means that a book that has gone missing in the library, that is somewhere not in its proper place, can actually be found by a librarian. And it means also that it registers when you go in and out of the building. So it simplifies life a great deal for those libraries that have managed to implement it.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest this hour is author Marilyn Johnson. Her new book is called This Book is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. Let's speak to Bonnie in Forney. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Love
sure.
the show. Great subject. And I'm a homeschooler, so we're pretty fond of our library.
Yeah, I bet.
I've heard that President Lincoln was practically self-taught in law by spending a considerable amount of time in the library. And I was wondering if your guests had any information to confirm that, or if it's just an urban folklore.
Thanks for your call.
I'll take your answer off there.
Thanks. Have you heard about that, Marilyn?
I've heard the same thing. I don't have a citation, but I bet I could find a librarian who would get one. I think, you know, he's not the only person we've heard about who taught themselves what they need to know in life at the library.
You know, we had a wonderful guest on a few months ago, a young man named William Kamkwamba, who wrote this book, The Boy Who Built a Windmill.
Yeah.
And he was from Malawi, I believe, and he essentially taught himself engineering because someone had put, USAID had built a library inexplicably in his little town. And you have some amazing stuff in here about sort of librarian missionaries and people who are trying to make sure that every corner of the world has access to this kind of information.
And it's wonderful. These are technologically deft librarians who've decided to use their desire to serve and their knowledge to help train students from every corner of the world how to use computers, how to network on them, how to post information about their countries and the situations there, and how to essentially enter a global conversation about human rights and world conditions. It's really fantastic to consider that the power of good is alive in the world and that it is using these information networks to disseminate itself.
Yeah, it becomes almost impossible when you hear stories like this to take our access to information for granted.
Oh, I don't take it for granted for a minute, and I think anybody who's had their laptop stolen, their Wi-Fi network go down, or, you know, has basically been on the outside looking in and rapping at the door, I really don't take it for granted.
Do you think that we'll get to an era of the post-book library?
I'm a writer, so I'm really, like, I'm very fond of books, and I don't think it's just the old-fashioned people who love to hold them in their hands and read them without some sort of video excitement going on in the margin.
Yeah.
I think they will continue to exist as, it's a brilliant little invention, you know, this thing with a spine that contains things in coded language. It's a great thing.
It is interesting, though. You wrote about the opening of a brand new library, and they, in addition to having good old-fashioned books, they're lending out things like Kindles and Blackberries and GPS systems.
Isn't it wonderful?
It's amazing.
It's a community that's actually, this is Darien, Connecticut, and it's been under a lot of stress lately because the economic downturn meant that a lot of people in this town who are in the financial services market or in real estate or in insurance lived in this town, and they have a very high unemployment rate. But this is where they've all decided to pool their resources, and it's important to them to know what these devices are all about, to understand how to use them, and to have access to them, even if the various individuals can't afford them. I think it's such a smart thing to do, a shared technological pool.
Marilyn Johnson is my guest. She's a writer whose new book is called This Book is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. We'll resume our conversation in a moment. We'd love to hear about how you love to use your local library. Give us a call at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can make your passion your career. Evening classes now available in Plano and Dallas. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Marilyn Johnson. Her new book is called This Book is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. Join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org. I want to go to this word, cybrarians. There is sort of an active library world in Second Life.
Oh, yes, there is. They are what I like to think of as extreme virtual librarians. Their virtual librarians are the ones who answer your questions without being right in front of you, who answer on the telephone or via a chat service. And extreme virtual librarians are ones who appear in virtual reality sites in the form of an avatar. And there's a one of the librarians that I interacted with a lot appears in the form of a 19th century gentleman, a very erudite one.
And it's just a matter, in many cases, this is just a passion. There's no compensation for this.
Oh, no. Usually there's no compensation for it. I like to think of it as a research and development tool for librarians. They are in this world. They're learning how to navigate it. It's really quite interesting. I mean, it may be the way that the whole web is going to look at some point, as a place not where you click from page to page, but where you actually send yourself somehow into it in a 3D way. It's a little bit hard to describe, but they're not only learning how to navigate this world, but they're trying to figure out how to bring library services and librarian services to this world. They have discussions. They have book chats. They have they can connect you with all kinds of resources on the web. And they can also tell you how that world works.
And a lot of librarians are also blogging these days.
Yes, they are.
Very candidly.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we have this image in our head of librarians being the kind of shushing people, you know, that they're very, very close-mouthed, and that's how they prefer the world. But when blogging started to catch on, it turned out there was a huge number of librarians who just found themselves full of things to say. They were exploring the web and finding neat places to go, and they wanted to share that information. They were learning how to use computers for libraries, learning how to use them for cataloging and for connecting with their patrons, and they wanted to share that information. And they also wanted to share some of the outrageous and fascinating things that have happened in their libraries. So you can find out, I mean, you can look around the web and find some of these librarian blogs that are telling you things about outrageous patron behavior and, you know, awful things that they found in the book drop.
Yeah. We'll leave it there, but it is pretty awful what they have to cope with on occasion. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Joe in Waxahachie. Hello, Joe.
Hi. You recently mentioned the RFID. I want to let you all know that it's affectionately known as an ARFID. And there are all kinds of joys and hazards of ARFIDs, lots of nice science fiction written about them. My question is, the uniform document code that you find on all books, does it have intelligence in it, or is it just a number?
You talking about the ISBN number?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that. Do you know, Marilyn?
I don't. I would imagine it doesn't have anything embedded in it. I think the devices just read the code there. But you're asking me about my ignorance is massive, but really it's not what I know.
Well, there is, and even for librarians who are right on the forefront of this, things are changing so quickly now. I mean, I would venture to guess that a library does things today that it couldn't have imagined doing even a decade ago.
You have to be learning constantly, I think, if you're in this field. We're all feeling this, no matter what we're doing in the world. But people who are actually in information services are, I think, challenged tremendously. But you know, there's an exciting part of it, too. It's a frontier. They're able to invent ways to use things that that are very challenging and involve a tremendous creativity on the part of these people. There's a lot of excitement in the field now also.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go next to Denton and speak with Lauren. Hi, Lauren.
Hi. I had a question for your guest.
Okay.
It's about the, I don't know, historical or quotable library. When I was a kid, my mother, and everybody knows your mother's your first librarian, told me that the Marquis de Lafayette, he was a general in the Revolutionary War, was so impressed with, I'm guessing it was Ben Franklin's circulating library at the time, you know, the little horse-drawn thing. He was so impressed with it that he wrote home about it, and apparently, according to him, this was one of, you know, the greatnesses of America. But I've never actually been able to come across the quote or the letter, and so I'm wondering if you can confirm this for me or if you had heard this as well.
It's a great story.
It's a great story. No, and I hadn't heard it. I've got a chat librarian who's now investigating about the Lincoln teaching himself the law in a library, which was a question that a previous caller had. I can certainly see what I could come up with.
So you've got a whole...
I've got my people alerted.
And you've got a, I guess most people can access this. Do they have to go typically through their local library or their sort of clearinghouse sites?
No, just go. Well, it sort of depends on where you are. I'm not sure what the resources are in Dallas, but I think just about anybody. I'm in New York State, but not New York City, but I go on the New York Public Library website, nypl.org, and there's a 24-hour chat service.
Yeah, that's a pretty amazing site. Mm-hmm.
And there used to be one at the Boston Public Library. Ohio libraries have one. More and more, I mean, it's really a wonderful service. But you could call the reference desk or probably email the reference desk of the Dallas Public Library.
Do librarians feel that people understand how much they're able to do for them? I think a lot of people are sort of under the impression that they're not supposed to bother the librarian unless they, you know, have spilled something on a book. Do they feel fully utilized?
Oh, good grief, no. I don't think so. I think, it swings from one to the other. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are people who come in and don't realize that you could use a librarian's help to find a job. You could use a librarian's help to understand a medical diagnosis. You could have a guide through government documents. These are much more challenging sorts of research questions than, say, where is the bathroom, which I suspect is really a very popular question at the information desk. I think it's, you know, there's a hiccup that happens after people get out of college, and a lot of people who grew up on libraries and studied in them and used them extensively through their school end up not tapping the library because they go off and buy their own resources, buy the books that they use and subscribe themselves to newspapers and magazines. And there's an idea going that libraries are really for the disenfranchised, the 20% of the people who don't have their own computers. And that couldn't be further from the truth. Libraries, public libraries are for everybody, everybody. And it doesn't matter really... I think it shouldn't matter at all even where you live. If they hang up a shingle that says public, I'm part of the public, and wherever I am, I would like to feel welcome in any public library.
I thought it was really nice. You also write about a lot more sort of private libraries, things like universities and other institutions are actually opening their libraries to the public, if not for lending, at least for entering and doing research.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you.
Let's go back to the phones now. 1-800-933-5372. We'll go to Lane in Dallas. Hello, Lane.
Hello. I have a question for the speaker, and I wanted to know, how is it possible that a library can give away or lend the electronic devices? Because there is a liability issue. There's risk of it being lost or broken. How can that be possible?
You know, I don't know how individual libraries handle it. I think in the libraries that I've known, where you can check out a Kindle, for instance, it's understood. I think you understand when you check it out that you don't want to lose it. I mean, if you check out a really nice library book and you lose the book, you have to pay for its replacement, right? So I think, I think if you want to use the Kindle, what they do is they'll load it with books, with e-books from the library, and you take it and you read some of them, and then you return the Kindle. I don't know what happens if you lose it, but I suspect if you were really afraid that that would happen, you would just use it in the library. You would check it out for a few hours and sit there and use it on the premises and therefore not really risk the fact that you might be, out $300.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Krishna in Grapevine. Hey, Krishna.
Hi, Chris. Great show.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk to your guest about the frontier of library science. I know she mentioned it a little bit. I'm actually thinking of going to UNT to get a master's in library science. And one of the fields that I keep reading about is having to do with healthcare. Obama's new Recovery Act, there is a large chunk of money devoted to medical database management, and they're looking to librarians to actually bring meaningful use for all the data that's going to be collected in this new healthcare revamp. And I was wondering if the guests had any comments on that.
I think it's so smart. I mean, bring the librarians in there at the beginning to help structure the information and be alert to the user interface. I mean, it's really sort of a trend out there that people are trying to figure out how the user experience impacts on what it is that can be found.
We have an email here from SL who writes, I believe the real benefit of the library is shared access to resources. Information is much easier to come by these days, but as you point out with the example of libraries providing GBS systems and Blackberries, the need to share has not gone away. It has simply become concentrated in other forms of media. Will libraries perhaps become more about providing access to electronics, the systems to obtain the information, rather than the information itself? What do you think about that?
I don't think they'll be reduced in terms of providing information, but the idea that they could also provide access to these information delivery systems is wonderful. It's economically, it makes economic sense, and it's also ecologically sensible. The number of cell phones that we throw away, the number of computers that get trashed, it's awful to contemplate, isn't it? And the idea that people who are not, needing them 20 hours a day would actually share them it's much more palatable to me anyway.
Yeah. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. Next on the line we have Steve in Denton. Hey, Steve.
Hi. I'd like to throw out a hypothetical question about public funding for arts and humanities.
Okay.
And what would happen if libraries didn't exist at this point in time, and somebody came up with the idea, let's build these big buildings and fill them with books and let people check them out for free. Do you think that would be a well-received idea or would be opposed by certain interests?
So, in other words, if we didn't already have them, would we,
right,
would we do it? What do you think, Marilyn?
I think when I think about it, libraries are still a radical idea, and I think it's just brilliant of our civilization to have come up with them. The openness of them, the service orientation of them, the fact that it's our right to have access to information. These are core values of our democracy. And if libraries were to disappear, if the budgets were to be cut to the extent that the libraries were open fewer and fewer hours and fewer days, I mean, how much of an informed voting population would we be having if we shut off that openness? I think it's still a radical idea. I'm glad we're not having to invent it right now, though.
I want to talk for a minute about the issue of space management, because new and important books are being generated literally every week, but most libraries do not have an unlimited amount of square footage. How do they decide what stays and what gets purged from the lending collection?
Well, there are collection development librarians whose specialty is this sort of thing. And, you know, they are expert not only at what is available and how to manage it, but what their community needs and wants. And so that would vary from community to community. I think they're really interesting issues, and I am one of those people who just hates to hear about weeding, which is what librarians call when they go through and pull out the old books or books that have been worn sort of beyond, they're not pleasant to actually hold in your hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always think, don't throw things away. If you throw things away, they're gone, you know. But there's one of these librarian blogs that we were talking about called Awful Library Books. And it's hilarious because what they post are the covers and a few inside pages of the most obsolete books that they find on the shelves of public libraries. And some of them are predictable, you know, 50-year-old books about space exploration and 30-year-old books about computers and things where everybody has a mullet hairdo. And, you know, and definitely politically incorrect.
It is an interesting little snapshot, though, into our past.
I actually say in the book, what I really would like is a little library that was full of those books that other libraries feel are no longer relevant for their patrons and have made them go away. Other libraries that I actually was doing research in take a lot of pride in the fact that when they thin their collection and get rid of books, that they're either leaving them out so people in the community can help themselves, or they're shipping them to places, to needy places around the world.
So they don't just go away.
They don't just go away. They're recycled, you know.
Marilyn Johnson, we have to take a quick break here. Marilyn Johnson is my guest. Her book is called This Book is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. Join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or emailing think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can make your passion your career. Evening classes now available in Plano and Dallas. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
Listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Marilyn Johnson. Her new book is called This Book is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. Join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org. We'll go next on the phones here to Cliff in Fort Worth. Hello, Cliff.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Welcome to you. I just had two quick comments. One, thank you for reminding me of the times when I worked in the high school library. We used to do something called reading the shelves, which back in the Dewey Decimal era meant you went from book to book to book and put them in order. But the thing that also happens is you see books that are really cool, and you take it out and you go read it. And so I recommend people just wander through the shelves and find something interesting. But the other thing I wanted to point out was that I was laid off several years ago. Of course, I can't afford a paper and I can't afford computers. But the other thing is, libraries have printers for doing resumes. And something else that happens, especially if you're a technical field like myself, you need to know a lot about the company that you're wanting to get a job at. And they have wonderful books that contain descriptions, sales, locations. All of that was in our Fort Worth library, and all the librarians were really, really helpful finding information that then I could put in my resume. And so people need to really look into, you know, all the extended information that is available in the library.
Well, those are great points, and I'm glad that you were able to find all that there, Cliff. Thanks so much for your call.
You bet. Thank you.
You know, Marilyn, he brought up having also worked in his high school library, and it did. I have to confess, I spent far too much time today. I found online the website for my childhood library in my community, and it was like a trip down memory lane. I'm probably the only, maybe the fourth person in years that has actually looked at every picture on their Flickr site. But they really do sort of bring back memories. I could remember so many hours that I spent there and so many activities that I did there.
It's a very meaningful place. And, you know, the books mean a lot. I mean, the stories that you read in books, sometimes you read them and you forget them right away. But other times, it's like they're imprinted there on your soul. Mm. And I think people really feel very strongly about books that transport them, that take them someplace else, or that give them this powerful insight into another person's character or the founding of a country, or whatever it is. And to have that much emotional baggage all contained in one place is, it's very meaningful. These are wonderful places. You don't want their doors to shut.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We go next to Howard in Dallas. Hello, Howard.
Hey, how you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I just wanted to call and thank Marilyn for writing a book about these unsung heroes in the public service, because I'm a truck driver, and I listen to books on tape and CD all the time, and it's a lifesaver. And every time I go in, I have yet to find an unfriendly or unhelpful librarian, and it's just great that she recognized that and wrote a book about them. I thank you for that.
Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
Yeah. I love audiobooks, too. They've made driving so much more interesting.
Yeah, I was able to.
I'm glad to hear they're all friendly and helpful there.
Yeah, and you didn't find too many. And you, by the way, this is, I think, a great story. My grandmother used to go to a different city, and she'd stop in a church, a Catholic church, and make a visit and light a candle. Mm-hmm. And you do that with libraries.
Oh, I do. And I use them sort of as my tourist information centers as well. So if I go to a new city, I'd like to stop in the library and ask them, what is there to see here? I think they're much more reliable guides than the commercial ones.
That's actually a great idea. So you're not just getting to the next TGI Fridays or something.
That's exactly right.
Finding the heart of the city. Let's go back to the phones now. 800-933-5372 is our number. We'll speak to Davis in Fort Worth. Hey, Davis.
Hi. I had a question for Merrill. I was wondering, what tend to be the typical qualifications for a librarian? You know, if you want someone who is this great source of knowledge and information and can help you find what you're looking for, what do they generally require out of applicants for that?
I think curiosity is a big part of it, and I think a love of reading and a love of learning. It's not something that you master and then coast on. It's something that you really have to feed all the time. I think a desire to help people, and I think a lack of a desire for personal glory. Hmm. Most of the librarians I met were incredibly modest and a little bit embarrassed at being recognized, for instance, by person and being written about. They really want to be your guide on the side. They want to help you out, and you know, don't look at them. Look at what you're doing.
Do most of them have degrees in library science?
Pardon?
Do most of them have degrees in library science?
If they are a librarian, they have a degree in library science. Some people who work in libraries are clerks, pages is what they call the people who actually shelve the books and sometimes check them out. But they're clerks if they don't have a master's degree. And there's a lot that many of the clerks have to bring. And some of them are very computer savvy. But if they don't have a master's in library and information science, they're not, strictly speaking, a librarian.
Let's go back to the phones now, and this time we'll speak with Gary in Dallas. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Chris. And I have a question for Ms. Johnson about a company that folded in California fairly recently. It's called Groxus, and they provided a software database for libraries called Groker. Are you familiar with that, Ms. Johnson?
I'm not.
I'm sorry?
She's not.
I, unless you're spelling it a different way than I am. How do you spell it?
Well, the software was Grokker, G-R-O-K-K-E-R, I believe. I might be wrong about the spelling, but they had a project going fairly recently in the last year or two with Stanford University, digitizing source information with the library. But anyway, my question is about this. That company had a very state-of-the-art digital database system for categorizing information, and it was very graphically oriented. And it folded, which surprised me, especially in view of the fact that they were, you know, with Stanford and doing a head of database project with digitizing information. So the question is, what do you think about funding for database management and for the future? I mean, where's the money going to come from if companies like this fold?
It's a time of great change in the library support field. There are a lot of mergers. There have been a ton of mergers of people who provide cataloging services and database services and software for libraries. It's a very interesting time, and I think that there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there who have some background in library science, some who don't, who are really carving up a frontier. It's very interesting to watch. I think it's quite sometimes not really necessarily has to do with the sophistication or wonderfulness of the product that they have. And this company sounds like it certainly had something wonderful. We hope that people land somewhere and can pick up where they left off.
Yeah, apply their knowledge somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Rochelle on the line next in Louisville. Hey, Rochelle.
Hi. I'm enjoying your program. And then, by the way, I always enjoy your program. You always do a good job.
Thank you.
My little story is my mom was the very first African-American woman to work in the New York Library as the library page first. She did, she went to school and became a librarian and worked for the armed forces for about 40 years.
Wow.
But my point being, back in the 30s in the state of New York, I guess, that was one of the very few places that the African American population could go, get information, and able to be helped in all different kinds of ways. My mom actually started on she actually went for her book badge through being Girl Scouts and ended up just loving the library. They hired her. She made a nickel a day. Okay. I mean, a nickel an hour.
A nickel an hour.
Which the only other black person they had on staff was, custodian.
Mm-hmm.
So she worked there for about 2 years as a library page. So it was a jumping start for so many advantages for her. So I just wanted to kind of add that to your story collection.
That's great. That's a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing it.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling. It is an interesting idea that these are places that are, you know, so much by purpose dedicated to serving everyone. You don't have to come into a library even knowing what you want, and you don't have to have resources, and they really are for everyone.
That's right. That dedicated to the open access. And, you know, that is a foundation of our democratic principles. This is what makes our country so great.
I think we have time for one more call. Let's speak to Steve in Euless. Hi, Steve.
Hi. How are you, Chris? Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I spent hundreds of hours in the library as a youth wondering and musing and finding and exploring, and it was just marvelous. But I want to take my hat off and express kudos to all the librarians who stood up to our paranoia in 2001, protect the First Amendment, and stood up to Homeland Security and said, no, we're not going to compile lists of what people are checking out and reading and hand it over to you. Thank you so much. And pass that along to all your friends.
Thanks so much for your call. And Marilyn, this is something that you write about in the book.
I do. I have a chapter about the Connecticut Four, three librarians and a library consortium director who took the case, you know, sued the Attorney General so they would not have to pass over their patrons' information. And, you know, they stuck with it. They were under gag orders, and now they go about talking and talking about how important it is, our freedom to information and our right to privacy in pursuing it.
You attended the ALA conference, American Library Association conference, a couple of years ago, and I'm sure there are a lot of serious matters to discuss, like things like, you know, standing up to the Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, though, if there's a different kind of energy that we wouldn't anticipate. Are these people partiers?
They are. They're partiers, and they have fantastic senses of humor and frequently directed against themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll make jokes about drinking a lot. And they'll also get together and put together book cart drills and compete with each other. Basically, they're making, what you might do. I don't even know who would do this. It's the kind of thing that you might drill and perform at a football game if you were gorgeous cheerleaders or something. But these are people who take book carts and spin them back and forth, spin them on one wheel, and do it all to, whatever pop song they pick. Thriller is a popular one.
The wonderful thing, too, is that we all know how librarians mentor us when we go in and need their help, but they also mentor each other.
Oh, yes. It's a wonderful culture. And, in fact, I have a friend who is motherless, who has found a job working in a library, and she says, I feel like I'm surrounded by mothers.
Hmm.
Which is not a diss on the male librarians, of whom there are many, who I admire. But she does feel that they're watching her back. They're taking care of her. And I get that feeling as a patron when I go into a library. I admire them so much. I think they're smart, and I love the way that they want to help.
Have you been tempted at all to combine your writing career with a library career?
You know, speaking of a nickel an hour, I worked as a page and was making 95 cents an hour when I was in high school. And I asked for a nickel raise after a year, and they said I couldn't have it. And that was the end of my library career.
So instead you went into journalism to make a lot of money?
Instead I went into journalism. Yes, yes. You know, lifelong learning, service, some of the same principles.
Wonderful things. Last thing I want to ask you very briefly, what's the first thing you check out when you're in a brand new library?
Oh, the periodicals, magazines.
Want to see what they have that your other libraries don't have?
You can read a lot about the population who comes in by which magazines. And I'm a magazine junkie from way back, so a soft spot.
Marilyn Johnson's new book is called This Book Is Overdue: How Librarians and Cybarians Can Save Us All. Marilyn, thank you so much for joining us for the hour.
My pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.